Hi, and thanks for joining us. This is the second of three podcasts focusing on the challenges that banks face as they transition to a fully digital environment. In our first podcast, we zeroed in on the specific challenges of opening new accounts online. In this podcast, we're digging deeper into digital ID verification. Adhering to Know Your Customer regulations is particularly difficult in the digital age, as more customers prefer to conduct all of their business online. Connor Hickey, OneSpan's head of solution architecture and software sales, is an expert on ID verification. He's with us today to explain trends in facial biometrics and how technology is making digital ID verification faster and safer. Connor, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rebecca. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. First, can you update us on some of the trends you're seeing in the field of ID verification and facial biometrics?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it probably goes without saying, but in identity verification itself as a general trend, we've seen the continued move away from physical identity verification to digital methods. And I think that's just in line with the general move to digital across all industries. In digital identity verification itself, the current trend is in verifying the identity of new customers with document verification, and then combining that with facial comparison to verify that the owner of that identity is in possession of the identity document. You mentioned facial biometrics, but If I look at biometric identity verification, I think that facial comparison will start to become more prevalent in our day-to-day lives. The application of facial comparison will start to move away from those simple, low-risk transactions like unlocking your phone, and we'll see facial comparison be used more in higher-risk transactions like opening a bank account or, applying for a financial product. So I think they're the trends that we're seeing, at present.
So where is the banking industry focusing in terms of ID verification?
I think from our experience, certainly, the banking industry is very much focused on that account opening use case. With 70% plus of accounts being opened online, banks focus very much on being able to digitally onboard customers in a secure and compliant way. And primarily, that's using that combination of document verification and facial comparison to do so.
You just mentioned facial comparison again, and there's been a lot of discussion and a lot of confusion around facial recognition versus facial comparison technology. Can you explain the difference between the two?
Yeah, there are two different usages of the same technology. So that's, it's easy for that to cause confusion. If we look at facial recognition first, that takes a real-time photograph, a selfie, of an individual and then compares it against a database of many individuals looking for a match. And a use case for that would be, or a scenario for that would be security or policing, where we would use facial recognition to scan a crowd at maybe a football game or an airport, a football game looking for known troublemakers or an airport looking for known criminals. That's where facial recognition might be used. Facial comparison, we take that real-time photograph of the individual, and this time we compare it against a pre-verified image of the person. So a photograph is taken from an identity document like a passport, and that's your pre-verified image. And that photograph would then be compared against the real-time photograph, the selfie. So they're the two uses of the same technology, but quite distinct differences.
Why is this difference important to the discussion of ID verification?
Yeah, I think this is the two use cases have very different or very differing consequences on an individual's right to privacy. So facial recognition, as we described it, implies that the individual hasn't given their consent for their image to be compared against a database of known images. All sorts of questions can be raised. Why is your image being used? Why is your image being captured without your consent? What is this store of images I'm being compared against? And why am I being checked? So there's a lot there around that right to privacy, whereas facial comparison, that's definitely with the consent of the individual. who's most likely supplying the pre-verified image itself. So no real impingement on their right to privacy there. So it's very distinct. When you look at that privacy issue, there are two very different usages or scenarios.
That makes sense. Well, why is document verification using facial comparison technology becoming the standard today for banks?
I think for banks, first, there are two proven technologies that people are relatively comfortable with, and I think they're relatively easy to understand what's going on. Also, if we look outside of the technology itself, they're being used to digitize existing manual processes where you might go into a branch with your passport to open a bank account. So, you know, you're just replicating an existing manual process with new digital technology. So there's a lower degree of risk to adoption, the customer adoption, and adoption by the financial institution itself, if that makes sense.
It does. Can you give us some examples on how facial comparison is being used for both known and unknown customer verification?
Yeah, sure. So let's take the unknown customer first, because this may be slightly more complicated, maybe more steps. So for that unknown customer, if we ask them to provide an image or a photograph of a valid identity document, such as a passport we mentioned, we can verify that they have a valid identity by using document verification software. We can then ask them to supply a selfie, and that selfie can be compared against the photograph from their validated identity document using facial comparison. So we've used document verification to verify their identity and give us a pre-validated image, and then we use facial comparison to compare against a real-time photograph.
Okay.
Now, if we look at the known customer scenario, well, we already know that they have a valid identity. We've done that when we've opened the bank account in the first place. So we may potentially already have a photograph of that customer available. So in that case, we only need to ask the customer for a selfie, and we can compare it against that stored photograph. Now, we could extend that, and we could actually maybe make use of the face verification capability on their mobile phone, if that mobile phone has been secured and associated with the identity. So it's a lighter weight piece of authentication in the case of a known customer. Obviously, there's many degrees of complexity that we could layer on top of that when we look at the risk associated with what they're trying to do. But on a very basic level, I think that explains.
Do biometrics provide better security against fraud than more traditional types of verifications, such as passwords and personal questions?
Yeah, I think when we look at those traditional, particularly passwords, I was reading recently in a Verizon data breach investigation report from this year that 80% plus of data breaches are a result of compromised credentials. So those, you know, usernames and passwords being compromised. And we've also seen with PSD2 regulations, they recommend that a second factor of authentication be applied to financial transactions to increase that security. So I think that's an admission in there that passwords are not secure enough. Now, biometrics they're another way of authenticating an individual, you know, and they certainly do have the potential to be more secure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they have to be implemented properly to be more secure. So I think the potential is there, and done correctly, they are more secure than traditional methods like passwords.
So as biometric technology continues to evolve, what does the future hold for ID verification?
I think from a technology viewpoint, facial comparison in the past has been hampered by the fact that it was quite easy to defraud using things like static images, a photograph or piece of video, or you've heard examples of people with masks impersonating
mm-hmm.
somebody. But advancements in liveness detection, that anti-fraud capability that's able to spot those scenarios, with those advancements, we should see more widespread commercial adoption of the technology. So I think we'll see that in the short term. I would also expect to see more adoption of near-field communications. I think that's become easier to use from a commercial point of view, or there's been advancements in the standards used. So again, that's a technology we should start to see more of. I think we'll also see more widespread adoption of services where your identity is stored and managed centrally by commercial bodies, or maybe even government bodies. You can use that identity, that centrally stored identity, many times to prove who you are, or to create accounts, or maybe digitally sign documents. So you create it once, it's stored centrally, and then used many times. And I think that's a formula or a method that we should see more of. I think finally, you know, there's an increasing demand for further regulation around technologies such as facial recognition and biometrics in general. We've seen the CEOs of both Microsoft and Google have spoken out recently demanding that regulation. So I think this will be a really interesting area over the next 12 months, and we should see a lot of development in around regulation of this type of technology.
Interesting. Thanks, Connor. You've certainly given us a lot to think about. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to listen to podcast 1 and 3 of this series. The next podcast delves into the world of mobile banking. We'll be looking at how banks can provide both the mobile experience customers demand with the security they need. For more information, go to onespan.com.